shift to transform from the old paradigm that is aligned with the mind and body and thinking we're somebody that we're not, thinking we're our egos, which is based on this external identification, and to actually go into the paradigm that does work, the paradigm of the soul, the real self. So the format is, this is a 5-part series. We're now already at part 3. Oh my goodness, wow, we're more than halfway through. And it will be a story from Satchidananda Swami's personal life, what it has been for him to recognize this old paradigm and what realization helped him to shift and go into bold, uncharted territory, the paradigm of the soul. We will, as time permits, have a little Q&A at the official close. And then at the top of the hour, we will transition to more Q&A for everyone who can stay after. Please do stay with us if you can. It'll be a great opportunity. Please make sure that you note down your questions. As you're listening to Satchidananda Swami, it should be sparking things. He will provoke our paradigms. He will help us to see things that we're not seeing. And we have to be very attentive to what's coming up for us and note down questions. And then when the time is right, we will have some opportunity to exchange with him like that. So you send questions via direct message to Michael Sloyer. Michael will wave to you. Send direct message to Michael Sloyer whenever you have your message. And the last thing is that we have a culture that we try to co-create together, and that is one of 3 principles: full-hearted participation. Please give your undivided attention. Don't be doing multiple things at the same time. Please keep your videos on as far as possible. If it's not possible, okay, no problem, but it helps a lot. So you're be here fully with your heart. Respect for the sacred space that is being created and the teachings and our esteemed guest, and then determination to bring these teachings into our lives, to internalize them. There has to be that hunger. We have to say, I'm determined to really take this on, to try something on for size. So please kindly give your full-hearted participation, respect, and determination. We're fortunate to have people zooming from around the world. It's a really wonderful occasion to be with you all. Satchidananda Swami is coming to us from Germany, and it's such an honor to have him. He's my guru, he's a dear guide to Upbuild, and he speaks regularly here by our good fortune. And we would love to now turn it over to you, Satchidananda Swami.
Thank you very much for this kind introduction, and I want to welcome all of you who are taking part in this series and also part in this particular episode of the series. I will today share with you a little bit where I found the basic paradigm mistake in the material way of thinking. And I do hope that whatever I can share with you today will spark in you interest to explore courage. It does take a little courage to walk the spiritual path, because we have so long lived in the ideal of being separate from the Lord. We have spun incredibly firm safety nets around us. If anything should not work, we have our insurance, our fire insurance, our car insurance. We work hard to put some money back on our bank account. We make contracts with our partners. Please never leave me. We have this marriage contract. We are trying really everything to live a life that is separate from our real self and the connection with the Supreme. And whenever something happens that collapses this world, we fear the we get the greatest amount of fear. Of course, the ultimate collapse, which is 100% sure to happen in everyone's life, is what we discussed in our first episode. It's death itself, who walks behind us at every second of our life and will at one time victimize us. So that's the ultimate factor that makes everything collapse. And we can only exist by blending him out of our thoughts, by sterilizing him. But of course, he will break through our nets all the time. So we have talked about this. Today I would love to bring your attention to the main mistake of the material paradigm. A materialist and material thinking means to live a life where we try to get the outside right. We try to have a good house, a sure relationship. We have a bucket list of desires that propel our attention to the outside. I don't know about you, but I wanted always to swim with the dolphins of the Black Sea. I wanted to live a life where every minute is full of exciting adventures. And we believe somehow and are told that if you get the outside right, if you make the good exercises which will keep your body healthy, if you eat the best food and so on, ultimately contentment will follow. Spiritual life, a life based on the assumption that I'm an eternal soul, means to get the inside right first and to feel that the outside will follow. I would like to share with you an experience. Before I became a monk, I was very driven. I was had been offered a huge amount of money by the cultural ministry for putting out a movie, making a movie. The script had somehow, which I had written, had somehow passed all the important people, and they all had said we support this script. And I was in the process of getting actors together, which I thought would be good. That was one of the roads I tried. I was practicing with our little band to break through to the show business. We had a band, it was called The Strangers, as far as I remember. And I was one of the two leaders. We shared it, the leadership, with a friend. And we just were about to release a single. Behind all this was a very ambitious mind, my own mind. But one night, I just felt so exhausted with all of this. And I questioned all of this, mainly because a good friend of mine had a tragic, a fatal accident. I remember the lines of Hermann Hesse in his book, The Steppenwolf, there Harry Heller, the main person, passes by a grave. Not a grave, it is the graveyard, and they had just dug the hole for the grave. And he was observing the words of the priest. And as far as I remember, he thought, is this how everything ends? With a few shovels of dirt and the words of a paid priest who speaks so many lies. And because I was exhausted, these lines came to my mind, and I thought, do I really become content by being so outwardly driven? Yes, there are signs of success. These projects are coming through, the film comes through, the music goes well. In this mood, I became interested in spiritual things. I remember I visited a concert by the famous sitar musician Ravi Shankar. I think he's still alive, but I'm not so sure. And because I played the violin, I was very fine-tuned to the most subtle nuances of the music, and I could immediately see, whew, there is so much richness in the sitar music. And I came after the concerts to him and said, how can I play like this? And he told me, for this you have to learn our philosophy. Oh, yes. Tell me, how can I learn it? Oh, young man, he said, it's not so easy. It took me many, many decades. But you can start with reading the Bhagavad Gita. And I remember reading the Bhagavad Gita and finding this total different mindset there. That is, that not material things which you arrange out there, like the movie and the success with the band, will make you happy, but a contentment can be found inside, where there is the self and the Supreme Self. I read this and I said, isn't that the point of everything, to find contentment? I read the Gita. I'm still a passionate reader. I read a lot, and it's dangerous for me to visit Tsipi, because she has such an interesting library that I could just lose myself in it and forget everything else. So I had read the Gita, and my only question was, are there people who can actually live by these values? Finding the self within, and finding contentment within it. Yes, I found monks, but then my training really started and my insights gradually grew. See, I had brought the same ambitiousness which I had in my material life into the ashram. I remember I wanted to excel as being the best of monks. I would, for instance, go on month-long fasts where I only ate an apple a day. I wanted now to be the best person in fasting. I remember how I remained very disturbed. Whenever the smallest things happened, I was disturbed. It all came to a peak, I think you would say, when I tried to do a tour de force, that means a forceful approach to this inner kingdom inside. I went to India and I went into a lonely, deserted palace. It used to be a palace. I had to share my space with the monkeys, who were now the kings of the palace, the new kings. And I was trying to absorb myself, but then whenever there was, for instance, when I met this big monkey outside, who was not happy that I had taken one of the room, it was perhaps his room, I was afraid. Whenever I tried to meditate, I heard the loudspeakers from the nearby town. It was it was the month of Kartik, where a lot of festivities were going on, and I was disturbed by the sounds of the loudspeakers. There was one song which came again and again, and at that time I learned it by heart. It said, "Sanyasi, come home," you know, "monk, go home," you know. So I heard this song. Now I cannot repeat to you the lines, but they were quite disturbing. So I thought, this stay in the palace does not work for me any longer, in this deserted palace. It's too close to the town. There are too many monkeys here. And I took shelter in another location. But again, I felt it was too close to the path where the pilgrims would pass and sing their songs, and I was disturbed by the pilgrims when they were sitting or singing. Then I went into the forest. I became disturbed by the leaves which fell on my head. It was a whole odyssey where I really tried to avoid the outer disturbances or the outer things that disturbed me, looking for the ideal and undisturbed situation in my life, until finally I found out that I was still in the materialistic mindset. If you get the outside right, an ideal place with no sound disturbance, no monkey disturbance, no mosquitoes, then you can make the spiritual journey happen for you. And I remember I was desperate. Here I was, I had given up my material career, my material life. I had tried my best with all outside external arrangements. I had become a monk materialist, or a materialistic monk who just took care that the right possessions were there, the right dress was there, the right meditation beads were there. But I had not made the paradigm shift that first get the inside right, and then the outside will follow, or at least you will not be disturbed by it any longer. Then I began to understand something. Do you know that all experiences which you make, including the happiness which you look for, including the contentment you look for, are first taking place in our minds? Therefore, the mind must be open and available for these experiences that come from that place where the contentment is. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, when one's mind is completely restrained from material activities, you have reached the perfection. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. I made the discovery at that time that contentment is not produced in our mind when we think about spiritual life, but it is experienced when you stop thinking. This is a revolutionary discovery. When the waves of the mind calm, then you can see the pure Atma. We live here at the lake in an ashram, when the lake has waves, we cannot see what is buried inside. The lake, when it's full with agitated waves, gives you can see only dirt. Only when the waves of the lake calm does the water allow a clear view of what is there at the end, at the bottom. And in the same way, my dear listeners, as you can see what is at the bottom of the lake only when the lake is calm, you can only see what is in the bottom of your self when the mind is calm, when the mind is no longer active with mental images, also with the impressions from the subconscious mind which sometimes come up, but when there is perfect stillness. When the mind is silenced by meditation, it is at that time where you discover the true self and where you find the contentment in yourself. This is also what Patanjali says. He says, yoga means, or meditation, when he speaks of yoga in this context, he means meditation. Meditation is the cessation of all mental activities, because then the meditator is able to see his true nature. How is his true nature? I think you have heard this many times. It's the Atma and the Paramatma, the self and the super soul, which reside in the heart. I have a very interesting memory from my youth. We used to live at an island between Germany and Denmark, and from the northern part of the island there was a big ferry which would go to the Danish harbor was Ratbihorn. It was a journey of three to four hours, if I remember. And I also remember on this ferry, they had a huge buffet, and we as children and young people would enjoy to go on this ferry, mostly because of the huge buffet. I remember because I was the son of the railway person in charge. I would be able to go for free and eat for free everything and as much as I want. So this ferry had a capacity to carry 500 or so people. And once in the winter, one of these ferries who had just left the German harbor and was heading for Ratbihorn, the Danish harbor, somehow got involved in a terrible storm. I was not there at that time, and I'm happy it was too gruesome, but my father told me he went out into the storm and he saw how the ferry began to capsize, I think is the English word. It went on one side, and people started to jump into the water because it was sinking. In the view of the island people, but the island people, and my father told me he wanted to go with a boat, but there was too much of a storm. So most of the 500 people lost their life. My father told me this, and it was gruesome. So later, one of the few survivors wrote a book where he described what was happening for him as he was when he had jumped into the ice cold water and tried to catch something like one of these life saving boats. They all capsized. It was such a huge storm. And he was just fighting and swimming and vomiting, and it was terrible. I myself have been in an accident, swimming accident, where I started to panic and had a little taste of what it could mean to drown. So as he was drowning, there came a point when he stopped fighting for life. He describes this. It was a point of absolute stillness when the waves of his mind, which had been so turbulent, calmed down. And now please listen with attention. At that time, he became very calm and silent. And all of a sudden, a huge happiness overflooded him. A happiness that was so great that later when he was saved, he was a survivor, he remembered that for the rest of the life, and he was thinking, if I somehow could come back to this state. This is, my dear listeners, what can happen when the mental activities somehow calm and come to a point of stillness. And this is what the ancient texts like the Bhagavad Gita, and I quoted to you the text in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, speak about. We all, as we live in this life, as long as we are in this separated mindset and in the separated reality where we are totally identified with that which is not the body, that which is meant to, I mean, I don't want to say not. Let me phrase this again. As long as we are totally identified with that, that which will eventually fall and deteriorate and disintegrate our mortal bodies, there will always be some type of fear that is inside of us, some type of ill-at-easeness. Yes, we can drown it out for some time when we have a very, very overwhelming physical experience, like the experiences which people have when they have an amazing adventure, or when they are together with a loved one in a romantic night, or which they can have when they flood their senses, like with impressions. But deep inside, all this is based on an illusion, a disconnected self who tries to find happiness. My spiritual master gave an analogy. When you take the fish out of water, where its natural habitation is, you can, of course, give him many overwhelming sensual experiences, but ultimately he will suffer because he's not in his natural element. So when you separate the soul from its eternal spiritual ground of existence, you can, of course, have overwhelming physical and mental experiences, but you are still out of your element. Therefore, a spiritualist addresses the point of fear, and which comes out of a sense of separation. I have a text here for you. That was the reason I wanted to find it, and I had to search very strongly, and therefore I was almost coming late to this. But here you find an explanation of this fear. Bhayam, the Sanskrit says, Bhayam dvitiya binivesatahasyat. I know this doesn't say so much for you. Fear and discontentment arises when the eternal living being misidentifies as a material body, and as it becomes absorbed in the external illusory energy, it becomes more and more overwhelmed. When the living being turns away from the Supreme Lord, he forgets his own constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. I remember when I was a child, I would go into the big park, which was before our residence, and I like to go in the darkness. And I remember when I walked in the darkness, I could see Dracula coming from every tree to get me. And I liked the chill for some minutes, and I ran back home. So this is what happens when the soul enters the material world. It enters the darkness, and it becomes overwhelmed by the shadows in the mind, the shadows in the world, and it becomes very, very, very conflicted. So what am I saying in this presentation? My dear everyone, satisfaction, contentment is your natural birthright. But if you live your life in the wrong attitude, when you live it in the outside world, when you project your consciousness on external achievements like I did, you can even enter an ashram like I did, but you will lack the contentment. There is an Upanishadic verse which I would like to say towards the end. The Creator gave us eyes that can look in two directions. The eyes can look in the outside and they can look in the inside. If our eyes look outwards, we see what is outside, not what is inside of ourselves. But the wise sages who seek immortality turn their sight inside and discover their inner self. And what do they find there? They find there the source of happiness and peace, the true self, which is in the real, which is in the Atma and the Paramatma. I want to now give you the most simplest of exercise that can help you to turn inside. It's very practical, very handy. Are you ready, Michael? I know Michael is in Japan and it is extremely early there, but still you look is very enlightened. What we will do is we will work with two two elements of any traditional meditation. We will center our awareness. We will bring it from the many, many outside engagements back by a progressive relaxation, and then we will do what is called prana vikshana, or an observance of our breath. That is the best way to focus our mind. I must tell you another story, and I have been encouraged to tell you many stories from my life. This is a little humorous. This year, when was I last in India? February. I was talking to one of my students there, Jaini Tai. And we were just talking, and then I saw this monkey coming down, and I thought, I'm sure he will not do anything. He's just we humans have to learn to coexist with monkeys, but the monkey suddenly took his glasses away and ran to a place before the kitchen, it was actually. So my student said, I'm sorry, we need to interrupt this discussion. I need to get the glasses back. I said, do you think you can manage it? Yeah, there's a simple way. So he didn't go towards the monkey. The monkey kept the glasses and started to chew on it. He went towards the kitchen and came back with a banana. And then he threw the banana before the monkey. The monkey quickly dropped the glasses and ran to the banana and caught the banana. That was, of course, the moment when we could retrieve the glasses, the spectacles. So this is how you have to take care of your mind, or mind your mind. It's the mind which pulls you outward all the time, even when you want to meditate. I showed you how I was struggling in India with the noise and with the monkeys and the sounds and the smells and the this and the anything. But if you tell your mind, don't do this any longer, don't run to the outside, it will only become stronger. What you need to do, you need to give it a better engagement. This is very important. If you want to come to this place inside, you will have to focus the mind and control the mind and stop it from running outside all the time. It's the mind which does the running, like a ferocious monkey. but when you tell it, stop this outside engagement, it's almost like telling a little child not to cry. You have to give it something better. The child, you give a toy, the monkey, you give a banana. By the way, the banana is no longer the best thing to give. Now they like all these fruities. Fruities is a little juice which you suckle with a piece of straw. They are very, very, very much in vogue amongst the monkeys of India. So yeah, let us give our mind a good engagement. And as the mind becomes pacified, remember my example of the waves of the lake, you can hopefully access that spiritual place inside. Okay, ready? David Charles Wilson, are you ready? Good. Vipin is there. Tsivi is already smiling. She is getting ready for the experience. Good. I request you to find a comfortable sitting position, but please make sure that your body is straight or that your spine is straight. Please, for the next 5 to 7 minutes, set aside your concerns. Park what is going on in your life on the parking place called later. You will take care of it later. And relax your feet and your calves up to your knees. Bring your attention to your thighs. Relax the thighs. Bring your attention to the back of your back, the lower part and the upper part. And relax. Shoulders, arms, hands, relax. Chest and belly, relax. Maintain a straight sitting position. Go to the back of the head. the forehead. The caves of your eyes, where the eyeballs are, and relax. And relax even the jaw. Appreciate how relaxed you are, how calm the body now is. Now, enter the breathing by slow breathing. You can relax the parasympathetic nerve system, which is for rest and digest. Do a calm inhale through the nose and a calm exhale. It is easiest to focus on your in and out going breath by counting. Count up to five when you breathe in. And as you breathe out, whenever that is your time, count also up to five. Never focus the mind. Connect it with the breath, and you will see how it calms down. Let us do this for about 4 to 5 breaths. Each one of us counts. And 5 seconds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the inhale, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the exhale. Let us do this. I will stop talking. Please continue breathing like this, and now just try to breathe into your heart. It means when you breathe in, you follow your breath as it goes through the windpipe down and reaches the area of the heart. And when you breathe out, you follow your breath as it goes out of your lungs into the windpipe and then leaves your body through the nose. The wise people turn their attention inside, and they feel the immortal self. We do 3 more inhalations, and we just focus our attention on a little light in the heart, representing the self, the soul. As we breathe in, it becomes slightly brighter and more expansive. As we breathe out, we distribute the light through our entire body. Two more breaths. And thank you very much. Please come back to room awareness. I know some of us don't want to do this, to come back to their lives. Give yourself the time to come back. Yes, this is the main experience which helped me in my own spiritual life to make a paradigm shift. The shift was not to come into the ashram as a monk. The shift was not to change my dress, my hairstyle. All this was outside. The shift didn't even happen when I adopted the other aspects of a monk culture, like rising early, going early to bed, taking to a strictly vegetarian diet. The shift in consciousness started to happen when I turned away from the outwardly facing mind and came in contact with the inwardly facing mind. And in bhakti, we do this by turning away from the world and going to its source, the Supreme Lord. And at that time, our material mind becomes free from all fear, free from all agitation, and it becomes situated in that eternal reality. Good. This is what I wanted to share with you. We have a little time left to see if there's any question in this first round of questions. We will stop at 7 o'clock. I will... and then we will, so that people who have to go can go very easily, and there will be still about 20 minutes to half an hour questions and answers afterwards. So, okay, please ask your good questions.
Thank you so much, Satchinandana Swami. Wonderful. So we ask Shreya, would you kindly ask your question?
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Namaste, Satchinanda Swami.
Namaste.
So, I think you mentioned that the path to having a non-materialistic mindset is to quiet the mind, to still the mind. And I've been meditating, but I find that I bring a materialistic mindset of I will quiet the mind the best So I'll do not only 1 hour of meditation, but I'll do 2 hours, and then I'll do 3 hours of meditation, like that. And so the question that I have is, how does one silence the mind without having that mindset, that, you know, that go-go effort material mindset, or that that mindset can actually be helpful in the beginning towards the path of silencing and then spirituality?
Very good. Very good. I'm very happy with your comprehension of the point. Yes, stilling the mind means to take it away from this outwardly facing activity and bring it to the self. And then the spiritual mind can happen. I always say you come from the small mind to the vast mind. It's a shift. You can't force that, and that is main. That's the main, one of the main problems which those who take to meditation and spiritual life have. They try to force their spiritual experience. There are two reasons why you can't force it. On a very beginner's level, if you want to come into the parasympathetic nerve system, which is responsible for calming you down, you can't force that. Have you ever forced yourself to go to bed? I mean, you can force yourself to lay down, but you can't force yourself to fall asleep. That is not possible. It will come as your nerve system relaxes. And it's very difficult to find out when exactly do you fall asleep. I try to find the point when I go into the parasympathetic nerve system. All I have come up in my case is when the pictures come, the images come. I see myself wandering in India, or I have some images. Then I'm close to falling into this different state of consciousness. But when exactly it happens, when do I cross the border? I don't know. So also in spiritual life, Shreya, when you go to the self and the super self, you can't force them. You can't force it. It will come when you shift from the achiever mentality, which is so much ingrained into our Western system, even if we come from India. And we enter the receiver mode. And that is something where bhakti, the path of bhakti, is very, very effective. It makes you turn to the Lord. It makes you understand not you are the doer, He is the doer. You just need to open your heart and allow Him to take you up like an instrument of His beautiful activities. And this opening of the heart does happen through chanting mantras. It happens through the right association. When I come to New York, we have an upbuilt event, and if you have time, please come, because I want to talk about the subject, how can we come into that mindset where we let go of our own efforts and open up ourselves for divine grace. But here, as a short answer to your question, I would say don't force yourself to meditate. It's better you have a relatively short period than a forced 2 hours, 3 hours. Because after some time when you force yourself, you will see, you will resist forced, and you will find meditation absolutely boring. Oh no, 2 hours, I'm a modern person, how can I carve out 2 hours of my schedule, and I have not yet touched samadhi and bliss and trance. It's a futile endeavor, and then you will leave it. Better a regular practice that is doable, and then you will come into that mood which I described with the analogy of entering the parasympathetic nerve system, which is responsible for resting and digesting. By the way, it's healthy to sleep well. Good, Shreya, thank you so much. I'm now a little bit mindful of the time. Our gracious host, what should we do? Please take over.
Thank you. So for everyone who needs to go, we're grateful that you came to be here with us. Please come back. We have one more week of Satchinandana Swami's storytelling and bringing us into an experience before we have a full Q&A session at the end of this series. So two more sessions left. Thank you so much. Please also stay. We have some wonderful questions that are coming in. Please do stay as far as possible. And deepest gratitude to you, Satchinandana Swami, for being with us. So with that, we will transition now. Adina, are you with us?
I am here.
Please ask your question. Thank you.
First of all, I wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing your wisdom, for sharing your personal stories, and mostly for sharing the wonderful, loving energy that you present every time I've seen you. I believe that you've already answered my question, so I'm going to divert it a little bit. My question initially was if you had any helpful practices to help us divert away from the often very strong pull of fear that puts us into a place of scarcity and being worried, as opposed to the abundance and joy that is our lives. And with your wonderful exercise today, something became very clear to me, and I want to check it out with you in addition to if you have additional practices. And that's a lot of the work I do has to do with helping people change their thoughts and their assumptions so that they and myself can connect with better ones. But what I got from today is it's about not being in a place of thought, but being in a place of calm, being in a place of breath, which seemed to put me into a very open place where there were no thoughts. It was connecting in that moment with my heart, with that moment, which I imagine would be a place of openness to the divine, which would get my parasympathetic nervous system calmed and not put me in a place of fear. Am I correct in assuming that? And are there additional practices other than, you know, in addition to your wonderful doable exercise today that can help support that?
Your good name is Adina, I see here. And you have a wonderful last name, which indicates a blossoming flower. Yes, what a wonderful comprehension of the what I wanted to share with you. You have, yeah, the question of fear is a very important question. It is actually said that difference between the spiritual and the material world is that the material world is full of fear. Kuntaloka is the Sanskrit word, and the spiritual world is the world of no fear, absolutely no fear. And the cause of this underlying fearfulness that is within us, like a like a constantly burning fever, so to say, which sometimes rises up and then goes down, is really our separatedness from our feeling of being separate from the whole, separate from God, separate from our real self. Adina, on Sunday, the Vaishnava words, this means the spiritual people who follow the Vedas, will celebrate the appearance of one form of God who in particular removes all fear. I will have to introduce you to his greatest devotee, Prahlad. Prahlad was so much hated by his own super materialistic and you can really only say demoniac father, that he tried to kill him at various instances. And later, after all the assassination plans had failed, Prahlad was asked if he was not afraid. I'm preparing a lecture on this because I will speak on that Sunday. I will refer to my notes here. When Prahlad, said one curious person, when you were thrown in a pit of snakes, were you not afraid? And Prahlad answered, look, my supreme father, Lord Vishnu, is resting on Ananta Shesha, a bed of snakes. Do you think that the servants of my father, the snakes, will harm me? He thought everyone, also the snakes, are only servants of God. Then he was asked, but you were thrown into fire. Didn't you feel fear when you were thrown into the fire? And he said, no, the ancient times, the Lord was offered clarified butter into a fire, and it was understood that the Lord's mouth is the fire through which he accepts the sacrificial offerings. Will my own father devour me? No, so I was not afraid. It's a long list of questions, and all his answers really say the same thing. He could see God's presence everywhere, and by seeing him everywhere, the divine source of everything, he lost his fear. So it's only when we cannot see God in a particular situation, when we cannot see his hand and his intention, that we are afraid. I'm counseling a person in Luxembourg at the moment. Luxembourg is bordering Germany. This person has a cancer, and I have asked a few months ago, yes, is there a way where you can reframe this illness? Is it perhaps showing you, could it show you that your present lifestyle is outdated, it doesn't fit any longer to you? Could it be one of these synchronicities which show you that you don't need to worry that you need to change your lifestyle. And we have worked with this idea that cancer is nothing than a wake-up call. And it's a wake-up call from above. And there is a very clear decline now. I was very happy to hear from that person that the last, they have some photos where they can, or some ways where they can photograph it. The last, let us say, investigation showed a clear change in the pattern. So I have learned in my life everything. I have learned to somehow frame it and see the cause of all causes behind it, and it has brought me amazing insights and, what is perhaps most interesting, amazing reactions, different reactions to whatever I considered threatening at that time. So the cause of fear is seeing yourself separated from the Lord, and to cure that fear is happening when you can be, how do you say, connected with Him again.
Thank you so, so very much.
Thank you, Adina. Jeremy, would you kindly ask your question?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Sachinanda Swami. So good to meet you, and this is my second time being with you. So much gratitude for you to just to be willing to share of yourself and with this community. I wrote down my question so I could get it right. And I'll just say, for most of my life, I've been a spiritual seeker. My family wasn't particularly religious, but you know, there was some Judaism in my family because my mom was Jewish. My father followed a guru who turned out to be unworthy of being followed. In high school, I became curious and started studying all the world religions, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism. It was a very intellectual approach of seeking. I studied the texts and the writings, but I didn't truly practice any of these things. In college, I became a conservatory cellist, so violin connection. And my spiritual practice was focused on creating music. I found great solace in spiritual practice and music creation. But I became a bit agnostic, and then from agnostic, I became an atheist. And then after college, I became a capitalist, and that didn't work out too well. So then I started seeking again. I started experimenting with Zen Buddhism and other forms of Buddhism, more contemplative practices. But throughout each of these experiments, I was very skeptical and had tremendous doubt, because these are attributes of my personality that have served me well and created safety, skepticism and doubt. I would find some reason to abandon them in the interest of safety, or maybe not being manipulated like my father was. I then experimented with shamanic traditions, indigenous cultures, and plant medicine, all extremely powerful and enlightening. And I've recently discovered another Buddhist practice that's grounded in chanting, and this feels right, and yet I continue to have skepticism and doubt. So my question is, after all this seeking, will I eventually be found, or am I destined to be a continual seeker?
Wonderful, Jeremy. First of all, thank you for sharing this most amazing story of a hopefully not perpetually seeker, a perpetual seeker. I'm learning under a spiritual teacher who has left the body in 1977. That's quite a time back. And once, it was in London, my spiritual teacher gave a lecture, and he was almost rudely interrupted, not completely rudely, but by a person who stood up in the lecture and said, "But have you seen God? Have you yourself seen God?" And silence descended into the audience. I mean, that's a big question. Normally, a spiritual person does not share his deepest insights with the crowd. And whenever he does, when he says, yeah, I've seen you, it's good to be a little bit careful and so on. So, but this time, my spiritual master or teacher, who was so careful in say and talking about these things, he said, yes. How could have you seen God? So he asked this to this inquirer, and the inquirer said, no. And then my spiritual teacher asked the main question, which I will point to you also. But do you want to see God? Now, Jeremy, this person had come to a temple. He was obviously in some ways attracted to spirituality. He had attended the lecture. He came there, and he was not a person who wanted to make disturbance. He was just very, let me say, moved, or his thought processes were all over. So this question came, and he did not want to answer it very quickly. He also reflected, and he then said, no. I think with your skepticism and your doubtfulness, you have a two-sided thought. There is a good side. It protects you perhaps from repeating an almost traumatic experience which your father had, and that he placed, I don't know how much faith or what, and it's not necessary to go into details here, but then he found out, this was not the right person. Doubts and are a sign of intelligence, and they can be very protective, but there comes a time when the doubtful mind needs to be silent and open itself for higher, let me say, insights than just the insights of the mind. As I told you in this presentation, we think by thinking we can solve everything, but there are many things which cannot be solved by thinking, and especially spiritual insights are not within the grasp of our incapable mind. So we are encouraged in the spiritual traditions to ask many questions, to doubt, to ask again and again and again. But at one time, there comes a time when we have to rest our doubt and just practice and see what experiences are awaiting for us in that time. But before you rest your doubts and your skepticism and all of that, inquire and don't accept anything blindly. But that needs to be done in the beginning, and then of investigating any process, and then you have to get into the process. I want to tell you today. Today was the most busy day in my life, and on top of everything, I made a little nature walk to calm down, and you know, there's so many things I have to do, and I lost the house key. I did one exercise, physical exercise in nature, and I must have lost it at that time. It fell out of my one of my pockets. So I came, and I knew I only have a little time to search for the key. It was an important key. So I went to where the bicycle is, because I couldn't walk all the place. And I saw the bicycle and I thought, can I doubt? This bicycle is so old. Can I put my faith into this bicycle, or will it fall or not? And I remember still, there was little air on the bicycle, but I had to find this key, and I had a very clear idea where I could find it. There was only one place. So finally, I had investigated the bicycle, so I got on the bicycle and I drove as if I'm the racing master amongst monks. I went to the place. I have never seen such a thing. It was covered with earth, but then at that time, the sky opened and the sunshine was shining on this foolish key, and some glitter came out of the earth, and I could find it. Ah, here it is, and I could bring it. I could find it. So, my dear Jeremy, study your bicycle very carefully. But when you have found out it could bring me where I need to go, then you should just get going on the bicycle. And what I mean to say is, study the process you want to commit to carefully, and when you have done your study, just get on the bicycle and just use your process. Yes. Thank you
so much.
It's a pleasure to see you, Jeremy. I'm very honored that you are taking part in this.
Hope to see you in New York.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. Arash, would you please ask your question?
Yes. Thank you. Es ist mein eine Ehre, Sie kennenzulernen, Maharaj.
Oh.
Nice to meet you. I'm here in Norway now. So here's my question. It seems to me that the more one becomes serious about spiritual work, the more it seems to be a call towards living in nature, but also a little bit separated from others, in tranquility, like a hermit. Most monasteries seem to be on hills or in quiet places, rarely in the city centers, of course. So how can we continue to live in urban jungles? Here, there are many opportunities to grow, of course, but it seems also very emotionally activating. Should we stay in cities, or should we seek environmental calm and nature relative isolation?
Thank you so very much for this question. Your good name is Arash. Good. I have been living a long time in Berlin, which is a very active place. It's like a little New York. Nothing can compare to New York in my experience. But it's also, and I have decided to live outside. I'm living at the bank of a lake, just across the road, a nice forest starts where I'm walking every day if possible. And my decision was based on the experience that it was not, let me say it like this. It was based on the experience of inner peace. I could see I was no longer peaceful in the town of Berlin, and there were so many reasons, but the constant life in the city, you know, the Berlin never sleeps, just like New York, which never goes totally to sleep, made me a little restless. But there was a time in my life when I was younger, when I did not notice this restlessness, simply because I was connected inside with a vision for my spiritual life, there was also a mission which I had, something which I wanted to accomplish, and I really felt that in the midst of this urban jungle, this mission and vision was so strong that I stayed in a protective bubble, if you wish, that did not get to my core. At this moment, my life has changed. I have other responsibilities. I don't need to take care of city ashram any longer, like I needed at that time, or I had chosen to do at that time. At this time, I have other duties and or other duties, not the word I want to use here, other priorities, you could say, and here it would be wrong. So I recommend for you, the answer is not the city is always unfavorable for you and nature is always favorable. It's really that place where you can be connected with a spiritual vision and a spiritual mission that is most favorable, and that might change. Now I can see you are still relatively young, you are not so very old, I think. So now is there may be something which you want to focus your energy on. It said in the first half of life, I heard this from C.G. Jung, and also I saw it from Vedic sources, you should build a container. The second half of life, you should fill it. So when you are still young, you might feel, especially when you are in a male body, the need to establish something, to maybe earn something so that you can get a house and so on. And but in the second half of life, there comes a time when you need to just be you need to work on the content of your life more. This is a little attempt to give an answer that is both spiritual and practical.
Thank you. Wonderful. So we'll close at this point. Please do keep your questions. They may be relevant. They will be relevant, in fact, in our full Q&A session. So those of you who did not get a chance to ask your question, please do save them. We will have more opportunities. Very grateful again for all of your presence, your staying after, and deepest gratitude, Satchidananda Swami, for everything you're sharing with us. It means so much. We can't wait for more next week with another story from your personal life and your spiritual realizations. All the very best.